Thank you for that. We're going to be in Mark chapter number 5 tonight, so if you can be with us there. But please don't just clap arbitrarily if you could. If we could pay attention here, that would be great. I know it may be good for you, but it makes me lose my train of thought, so please let's not do that if we may. We're going to be in Mark chapter number 5, and we're going to look at this story. It's split into two. There's the first part of the story, and then there's a gap in between there, and then we get to the end of the story that I want to share with you there. And I want to share a point from the story I think that all of us face at some time. All of us have times in life when there is something that we wanted or needed or something was going on in our life, and it seemed like God was directing the steps, right? Like, oh, this is working out, and this step, it leads to this step. And it's like, okay, this is going to happen. This is the thing that I was waiting for. And then at the last second, something happens that completely turns the dynamic. I mentioned before, and I won't spend a lot of time because I have, when we were in Florida and I needed a job and I was working a temporary job, and that day for whatever reason I wasn't working, so I thought, well, I'll just go look for another job since I'm not working today. And I went cold turkey. First place I went to, like, yeah, I went to fill out an application. I'd worked that job before. I worked that type of job before, and they're like, we're not hiring. I'm like, well, let me fill out an application anyhow. And they're like, fine. I filled it out, and as soon as I turned it in, the lady to this said, wait here. And she brought out the HR guy, and he brought me in. He talked to me. He goes, you know, I'm going to hire you. I thought, great. I remember going home like, man, God orchestrated this whole thing. I was supposed to be working another job. First place I picked, I wasn't supposed to even fill out an application. Guy hired me on the spot. I only had one thing I had to do, pass a lie detector test. And I'm like, no problem. I don't plan on lying today. And I went and I took the lie detector test. I'll never forget when I called him. He said, call me back. I called him back. He goes, you failed. We're not hiring you. Click. No explanation. No nothing. Good job. Good paying job. And I needed the money at the time. And I remember going out. And you know how it is. You talk to God sometimes. You try to talk him into things. Like, God, no. You were orchestrating this. I mean, this happened and this happened. How could this not take place? And of course, after a while, God dealt with me, and I'm kind of like, all right, there must be something else out there. But things like that happen in life. There's a twist, there's a turn, and we, if we're not careful, we can get discouraged. You get disappointed, you feel defeated. But I will say this, how you respond when things happen like that in life shows the true depth of your faith, right? It is easy when everything goes your way and you don't have to fight for anything and everything just kind of works out. It's like, hey, that's just how it's supposed to be. That's not life. Well, I'm saved and just it's a wonderful plan. That's not how God always works. And so I want us to see that tonight in this story. This story here, a man named Jairus, and he's a ruler of the synagogue. He has a daughter who's sick. The other gospel that mentions the story tells us she was 12 years of age, and she's very, very sick. And so he finds out where Jesus is, and he goes to Jesus and asks him, like, hey, my daughter's very sick. Can you come to my house? He wanted her to be healed. So Jesus agrees, and they go. And as he goes upon his way, there's a crowd that kind of slows them down. Jesus stops and has a little conversation with another lady, and we'll look at that in a minute. And then Jesus stops and helps this lady, and then they're going to go to his house. Now, up until the point we're going to jump into in a minute, he has done really everything right as an individual. You think about it. This man was humbled. He was a ruler of the synagogue, so he was in charge, and yet because of this need in his life, he was willing to be humbled and go to somebody for help. When he hears that his daughter's about to die and she's at the point of death, he makes a beeline to Jesus. He was on a mission. He wanted to get there. He wanted to do what was best for his family. He finally gets to the Messiah. He went to the right place to get help. And then the Messiah, Jesus, goes with him and they're on the way to the house. And he must have been very, very excited. But he also must have been, you know, a little bit nervous. He wants to get there. His daughter had a need. And even along the way, look at verse 25 in Mark chapter 5. I want you to see this little interim story here. He even sees a demonstration of healing. In verse 25, and a woman, certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years and had suffered many things of suffered many things of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was nothing bettered but rather grew worse, things weren't going well for her. When she heard had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment, for she said, if I may touch his garment, I shall be whole. So this lady, as they're going, think of this ruler, he wants to get to his house quickly. His daughter is on her deathbed. And as he's going, there's just nothing but these delays. And then this lady stops. She touches the hem of Jesus. She gets healed, and Jesus stops right there. And he deals with this lady, and he talks to her upon the path, and he encourages her because of her faith and because of what she did. And you can imagine this guy. Now, I'm sure he was a little perturbed, like, hey, can we get going here? But I also would imagine he was very encouraged by what he saw. See, he was asking Jesus to come heal his daughter. And on the way there, he sees a demonstration of what is, hopefully in his mind, about to happen because Jesus is coming with him. So I'm sure he's a little bit excited. But the Bible tells us, as soon as Jesus got done talking to this lady, immediately this happens in verse number 35. And while he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? You imagine how he must have felt? By the way, he gets bad news, and on top of bad news, he gets some really bad advice. Hey, your daughter's dead, leave Jesus alone. Could you imagine how he must have felt? And just like that, everything must have changed in his mind. I lost my daughter. What's going on here? Now, Jesus did give him a little bit of encouragement later. But he must have been confused because everything was pointing towards Jesus coming to his house and healing his daughter, and then all of a sudden, she's dead. She's gone. It didn't turn out the way that he wanted it to. Now, if you ever see yourself in this situation, what do we do? You see, because life doesn't always turn out the way you want it to turn out. You're not going to get through this life without any bumps or bruises. You're not going to make it without detours along the road. But the problem isn't the bumps. The problem isn't the bruises. And the problem's not even the detours. The problem so often is how we handle those things. We let it affect our faith. Now, in this story, I see a few things that he did, or a roadmap, really, of what we should do when things don't turn out the way that we want them to. Are you ready? Let me give you a couple and we'll be done. Number one, you must recall facts. Look at verse 36. Jesus steps up right away. And as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, what? She's dead. Don't even bother Jesus about this situation anymore. He saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, be not afraid, only believe. He gets from the mouth of Jesus confirmation through the word of what he wanted to happen in the first place. And then the alternative gospel where this story is told, Jesus, they give a little more detail to it. Jesus not only said, fear not, believe only, but he also says, she shall be made whole. See, Jesus steps up and says, hey, this is going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Just because she died doesn't mean that, you know, his power didn't end when she died. It wasn't just that Jesus could heal those that were sick. He could also raise people from the dead. And so he gives her a word. We also have a word. The fact of the matter is, we have a Bible full of God's words. And the thing is, whenever we get discouraged about something, instead of looking at the scripture, we start doing other things. We start turning away from the very thing that we need to keep us online where we are going. You know what the thing is? Our feelings start to take over. And by the way, that would be natural. Any father would feel the same way. Any father would feel like, my daughter's dying. Can we quickly get there and get some help? I'm glad I'm seeing this demonstration. I'm glad for all these other things, but I want to get there. My daughter needs you. And then to hear those words. But here's the problem. Sometimes we hear the words of Jesus and we know what they say, and they seem too good to be true. And our feelings start to take over. And let me just say this. We are not to live by our feelings. In fact, the matter is, if you live by your feelings, you're going to get yourself in a lot of trouble. Feelings, and by the way, our whole society now is built on feelings over facts. I feel like I'm a girl, but you were born a boy, right? You know, I feel that this is the right thing. Yeah, but God says that it's a wrong thing. Feelings are very corrupted. We want to silence facts today because it can hurt someone's feelings. And by the way, you know, people don't want to hear the truth if they don't believe it because it offends them. Now, fortunately, we live in a country where we have freedom of speech. And freedom of speech means that what I say, you may not agree with. And what you say, I may not agree with. We're supposed to look at everything and say, is this truth? Is this the fact? Quit living by your feelings. We've raised a bunch of children that are just nothing but a bunch of little whiners. You know, safe space and all that nonsense. And everything is over emotional. When our feelings start to raise up, we ought to just calm down, take a step back, and say, what's the truth of the matter? Especially when it deals with things of faith. We're not supposed to disbelieve the facts because of our feelings. Okay, we're supposed to leave our feelings to the side and make decision based on God's facts. People do this all the time. Have you ever heard someone say, you know, I'm making this decision. I just have a peace about it. Now, if you've made the right decision and you have a peace about it, that's okay. But having peace about it doesn't make it the right decision. Okay, let me remind you that Jonah made a decision to disobey God, and he had so much peace in his heart, he was asleep at the bottom of the ship while it was going under. But he had peace. Let's make sure that peace doesn't trump facts. Well, I just felt like this is the right thing to do. Here's the thing. Have you ever thought that you could be wrong? Because all of us can be wrong. Just because it feels right doesn't make it right. Well, I just felt like at this time, that's what I had to do. Here's another feeling. You ready? I was just following my dream. It's what I've always wanted. Well, that's great. But is it what God wanted? People do that all the time, and then they get to where they thought they wanted to be, and it's like, you know what? That was the worst decision I've ever made. So let's not just follow our feelings. Feelings aren't very good. By the way, Jesus gave us the game plan for dealing with issues. In Matthew chapter 4, when Satan came, three times he tried to tempt Jesus, and what did Jesus say? In Matthew 4:4, but he answered and said, it is written. Matthew 4:7, Jesus answered and said, it is written again. And in Matthew 4:10, Jesus added a little phrase, get thee hence, Satan, for it is written. He didn't sit there and argue with Satan from some other standpoint. In fact, he didn't argue with him at all. All he said is, it's written. What does that mean? Here's what God said. Here's what I'm doing. I don't care what you say. I don't care how I feel. People, you ever see people, they want to ask you hypothetical questions, right? You know, they'll ask some idiotic question when it comes to a moral issue to try to get you into the dilemma. And the situation will never occur in the first place. It's just dumb. I like what they asked Jesus one time. You know, well, you know, excuse me, in the Old Testament, if you got married as the older brother and you had a wife and you died and you didn't have children with her, guess what? The younger brother was supposed to step up and marry her. Now, could you imagine? The younger brothers are like, hey, time out. You know, what does she look like? What is she like? Because this situation may go south really fast. And so they come to Jesus and say, you know, this lady and all the brothers died, and there were seven brothers, and, you know, in the resurrection, whose wife shall she be? A really idiotic question. Jesus answered it here in Matthew 22, 29. Jesus answered and said unto them, ye do err, not knowing the scriptures or the power of God. You know what their problem was? They were taking the Bible out of context. They didn't get the truth. They were trying to get Jesus and prove a point with some idiotic hypothetical that would never happen. And Jesus said, hello, stick to the truth. And so when things aren't going the way you want them to go, I encourage you strongly, stick to the truth. Stick to the facts. You know what they say, right? The facts don't care about your feelings. And so don't let your feelings take over. Number two, along the same line, we need to reject fear. Jesus said very clearly, be not afraid. Why would he say, be not afraid? Because that's the first thing that's going to come out. He knew the first thing that he was going to think about is, it's over. It's done. And Jesus says, no, don't fear. Fear is a paralyzer. People will back away from what they're supposed to do simply because of fear. It causes us to quit. It causes us to step back. It causes us to be discouraged. The good thing is this: God knew that we are a fearful people. And so God in the scripture put things in there to try to keep us from being fearful in what we do. He told us several times, don't be afraid because we are alone. Isaiah chapter 41 verse 10 says, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. And Hebrews chapter 13 verse 5 goes, let your conversation, manner of life, be without covetousness, and be content with such things you have. For he saith, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Do you know how we act when we're afraid? We act like an atheist. We act like there is no God. When you take things into your own hand because of fear, or you start to disbelieve because of fear, you're stepping into an atheist type of lifestyle. Okay, there's nothing wrong with fear itself. What's wrong is when we quit doing what we are supposed to do because we are fearful. See, fear is just one of those things that keeps you from doing the right thing. It keeps us from following and doing the things that we are supposed to do. Could it be that when things don't go our way, we're tempted to think that there's something wrong, that God has forsaken us? People have done that, right? How many of you ever hear someone say that? Where is God? I'm trying to do the right thing, and it just seems like nothing is going my way. Where is God? Has he forsaken me? I like to think that the opposite of that would be true. Maybe God is allowing those things in our life because if we will allow it to, it will drive us more to God and not away from God. It will help us realize we need him more, not that he has abandoned us, because the fact of the matter is, God never will abandon us. Fear should drive us to God. Psalms chapter 56, verse 3 and 4 says, what time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. The psalmist had it right. When I'm fearful, it's a signal from God that I need to go to him. I need to be driven to him, and I need to quit thinking about this thing strictly from my own perspective. They said that, how many times in the Bible is there a phrase or a form of the phrase, fear not? Because God knew we would fear, and God does not want us to have fear. And let me say, if we allow fear in our life, you have to understand this. It's not from God. It's actually the opposite. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, for God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Some of us struggle with that whole sound mind thing, but the others we get, right? But God says, look, if you have that spirit of fear, God says, that's not from me. And that just makes sense as we get to the next point. We're supposed to, number three, we're supposed to retain our faith. Because as I said, if we have a spirit of fear, we're not going to have faith. The two cannot coexist. Faith says, I will believe in God, and I know that he will do what is best, but we have fear, and a spirit of fear, we're not trusting in God. We like to have security. The problem is that, look, we would prefer, and I'm with you, we would prefer there's never a problem. Everything goes great. We never have to deal with issues and all this stuff and all the drama. But you know what? That's not life. And so we have to hit this head on. But the thing is, God uses this to strengthen our faith. Jesus said to him, only believe. He said, you believed me before you found out your daughter was dead in essence. Are you still going to believe in me now that your daughter is dead? You came and got me because you thought I can heal her. Keep believing because I can do a lot more than just heal somebody. But you got to keep your faith. Faith is great, but understand that there will always be enemies of faith. But we have to retain our faith. How do we retain our faith? Well, faith is seen primarily in obedience. Faith is really this. When we believe God enough to do what he says. Here's a person that lives a life in complete disobedience to God, but they'll still sit there and say, I have faith in God. That's not true. How can you have faith in God if you don't even listen to what he says? How do you have faith in God if you don't even trust him enough when he says, do this, this is the best course of action, and we want to do something different? That's unbelieving. And so we have to keep the faith. If you read Hebrews chapter 11, we call that the great chapter of faith. What do you see in there? Let me pick a little few verses out, and you'll see it in the life of Moses, but it's seen in all the different characters that are listed in Hebrews chapter 11. Faith is seen in actions. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24, it says, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of his reward. You know, Moses finally figured out and realized who he was, and he was not an Egyptian. And he could have chose the life of letting that go and staying in Pharaoh's palace, and he would have had everything this world would have had to offer. But the Bible said by faith, he chose not to do that. He chose to follow God and leave all the rest of it on the table. That's how faith is. Faith doesn't make choices based on what we feel is best for us. Faith makes choices based on following God and believing that he knows what is best. And we must fight that all the time. We must have faith in God's word. And we must have faith. Well, Pastor, what do you do in a worst case scenario? You believe Romans chapter 8, for we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And we say, well, how can this work to our good? If you read the next verse, it talks about the fact that he wants us to be conformed to the image of Christ. You know how he does that? When we deal with issues we don't want to deal with. When we go through things that are difficult. When we allow God to work in the difficult times, he uses that, I think, more to mold us than when everything's going great. Because when everything's going great, you know what we have a tendency to do? Now, we don't say it, right? But we kind of like, you know, we're just not as driven to God as we should be. That's just human flaw and human nature. And so we need to retain faith. Number four, we also need to relentlessly follow. Look at verse 38. What did he do? He just stayed the course and kept following Jesus until they got to his house. Verse 38. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue. He didn't say, you know, Jesus, don't worry about it, go your way. It's not going to work out. Jesus kept leading. He just says, I'm just going to follow him to the house and let's see what happens. You know the worst thing a person can do when you're having a tough time is to quit following Jesus. And I've seen it over and I've seen it over. I've had people I'll contact, hey, missed you at church, you know what's going on? And like, I'm just going through a real problem right now. And once it settles out, I'll be back at church. You know what I'm going to, I don't tell them this, but they won't. Because you're allowing that thing to take you away from the very thing that's going to help you get through it. You're not going to get through it without God. You're not going to get through without his help. And so we put God over to the side and we allow Satan to push us away when we ought to just say, I'm going to keep following. There is nothing that is going to stop me from following Jesus Christ. Things may not seem like they're going the way I want them to go, but I do know this. The worst thing I can do is stop following Jesus, and the best thing I can do is keep following him. Just keep following him. Bad things happen and people quit. We've all heard of the missionary William Carey in India. After he got his mission a little bit established and he was doing work, the society over there sent him a printer and a guy to help him because he wanted to translate their scriptures into their language, which was very important. So he went about this business of translating their scriptures, and he translated their scriptures, he translated a dictionary, grammar books, because he wanted the next missionaries to come in to be able to understand the language there, because they didn't have anything in Christian, any Christian things in print, and he spent 12 years, and they were starting to print some of this stuff, and one day there was a fire, and everything burned down. Printing press, the type, everything he had translated. Could you imagine spending that many years of your life, 12 years of your life translating, only to have all of that work go up in an instant? You know what he said? When they told him about it, he goes, I'm thankful that I am at an age that I can retranslate it. And he went through the hassle and the trouble, years and more, translating everything that had been lost. Most people would have thought, oh, it's not God's will. I wasted my time. God, why would you do this? You know, questioning it. But that's not how it works. So let me ask you this. We'll move to the next point. Is there anything that would keep you from following Jesus? I mean, we understand the thing. Satan is so sharp, to be real honest with you. You know, he uses the world. He uses flesh, he uses friends, he uses all this nonsense. And then he comes on the flip side and he uses life when things don't go our way. What would keep you from following Jesus Christ? If there's anything you can think of, then maybe you're not really following him in the first place. We need to follow him regardless of what happens. Next, verse number 39. They get to the house. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, all these people are there, they're having a little funeral, and they're all crying, and all the stuff is going on. Why make you, excuse me, why make you this ado and weep? Because what's going on here? And then he says this phrase, the damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. That phrase always hits me, like that's a laugh, like what is wrong with you? I like his reaction. This is the kind of reaction I would like. Are you ready? And when he had put them all out, you know what he said? Remove the faithless ones. He says, these people here, you're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem. Get them out of here. I don't want to see them. I say, Pastor, that's harsh. I'm all in. Look, if you're trying to get something done and there's a bunch of negative nallies, it's like, you know what? Well, let's you out of here. I don't need you. You don't believe in it? Fine, we're doing something here without you. And it'll happen. People will rain on your parade. You get saved, right? And you start living for God, and you become a Christian, and someone says this, you'll grow out of it. I mean, you young people, like, that's okay. You know, when you get a little older, you'll realize that's just for children. No. Someone decides they want to spend their life serving God, right? And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Go to church. Read your Bible. Be a Christian. But why would you give up your life career to serve God? Someone decides they want to get involved in ministry and serving. You'll have friends, family, someone ignorant say, why do you waste your time down there at the church? Here's one. Someone finds out you're giving to the church. Like, and I not only tithe, I give to missions. I give to other projects. And they're like, why in the world would you throw your money away like that? There's critics everywhere. They'll try to drag you down by criticizing you. Listen, if you don't like what we're doing here, that's fine, but keep it to yourself. I'm not going to hear it. That's just negativity. Well, you know, Pastor, I just don't think we should, you know, why do we need another bus? Then get over it. I don't want to hear that. We live in such a negative society. Everybody has to run to their social media and tell you what they disagree with. And you know the sad thing is? Those of us they take shots out, we're never going to get up and tell you the real, we're not going to get up and tell you the other side of the story. Look, I've had people, not a lot, we've been very fortunate here. They don't like our church, they'll get up and say something on social media, and I'll be honest with you, I want to get on social media and like, can I tell you the truth? But you know what? What good is it going to do? I don't want to make anybody look in a bad light, even though I want to make someone look in a bad light. That's not Christian. Look, you know what? You say, well, Pastor, I just don't think we can do these things. Keep it to yourself and just keep an eye out and we'll do it. And maybe you'll get on board with it. God's not called anybody to the ministry of criticism. You know, there's always somebody. Man, I think we could really do this. And everybody's excited about one person. Well, Pastor, have you thought about... Now, again, we don't have that here. God bless. I'm so glad. But I don't want to have it. Okay? God wants to do something. And maybe if you're not, you're not quite getting it, just be quiet and keep your eyes open. And you'll see it. And maybe it'll change your mind. But here are all these people. And here's Jesus. And he says, she's not asleep. She's not dead, she's just sleeping, and yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. And he said, you know what, we're going to do something really great here, but step number one, there's the door, use it. Okay? Let's take the negativity out of our life. Quit listening to the wrong people. You say, well, Pastor, I'm listening to them, but I know what the right thing is, and it's not going to affect me. Yes, it will. I'm going to tell you, I don't do a lot. I do one social media, Twitter, and I follow certain people, and I want good news, and someone will get a little sideways and start doing stuff, and it's like, unfollow. I don't want to hear that garbage. Keep it to yourself. Some church will get up and say, hey, we had 20 saved in church, and some idiot will get on there. Well, I wonder how many of them really got saved. A higher percentage of the zero of yours that got saved. I read one, Brother John said, and this guy said he was rejoicing because he won this many people to the Lord. This boy, I don't think that many people can get one because you're not trying. You're going to get upset about people getting saved? Give me a break. Get online. We had a, what was the thing we had? We had Wild West Roundup Sunday, someone showed, and I don't get that stuff, but don't show it to me either, because then I get a really bad spirit. You know, well, that church is doing this, blah, 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 blah. Because we're trying to reach people with the gospel, get over yourself. Oh, they didn't criticize the fact that we had like 20 adults save that service. Look, can we quit being ignorant? Can we quit letting someone who's because they're backslidden pull us down? Let them do what they do. I'm not going to fight them. Now, I'm going to say it publicly because I don't want us to be infected. I'm not fighting them. I could care less. But you know what? Don't let it drag you down. You're all excited about what's going on, and some person that's been saved for 30 years and backslidden and quit soul winning and quit all that nonsense, and they're going to drag you down? Don't listen. Okay, that's good. Lastly, receive fruit. Here's what happened at the end. This is the last thing. Verse 21. He took the damsel by the hand and said unto her, Talitha kumai, which is being interpreted, damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And lo and behold, look what happened. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. Do you know, because he continued on and he didn't get discouraged and he didn't take off the path, he eventually saw the fruit. Can I just say, the fruit of living for Christ doesn't come to those who quit. It comes to those who stick it out. You say, but pastor, in this situation, I thought that it would go this direction and it would work out, and it didn't. Could it be, and I'm pretty sure it is, God has a different plan for you? See, just because we didn't get what we wanted doesn't mean that God doesn't have something else for us, right? I mentioned the story at the beginning where I thought I was really upset when I didn't get that job. I needed it, it was good money. But you know, a couple months later, I had a better job, better hours, making more money, and I was in charge. I'll take that. God said, no, I know that's what you thought was best for you, but I don't think that's best for you now. I've got something better for you. And I know this, God loves you. And I know this, God wants to work in your life. And I know God can use the things that we've set our hearts on, and it seems like it's the right thing. And by the way, we don't have a bad heart about it. We love God and we're trying to do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying we're being selfish about the situation, but we just get our hearts, and it didn't work out, and it's like, man, what's going on? God says, I got this, don't worry about it. Keep following me. You're going to get to the end, and you may not, in this case, he got what he wanted. You may not get what you wanted, but I guarantee you, you will still feel right, and it's the right thing, and you'll get the right fruit when it's God's timing. The problem is, Satan's trying to detour us so we never get to that point. That's it. He's trying to keep you from that spot in your life. And you know, the sad thing is, I know people that have experienced that, and they still get thrown off the track. And God's already, why does God have to constantly reprove himself to us? Now, he does, don't get me wrong. But why does he have to in order for us to keep following? Why don't we just trust him and say, you know, Lord, didn't turn out the way I wanted this time, but I'm going to keep following you because I know, look, do you think things will get better if you quit following God? No, then just keep going. Don't be disappointed. God didn't fall off the throne. God's not in control, and God has not forsaken you. Let's just keep following him. We'll get to where we need to be. Let's stand together if we may. Just for a minute. Every head bowed and every eye closed just for a minute. It's just following God. It's not imposing what we want upon God. Have you ever done that? I'll be honest with you, I've done that. I've kind of wanted what I wanted, and I just kind of threw it in there like, you know, let's just talk God into this thing, right? And then we see signs that aren't really signs. Can we just be content with following God? Can we just be content with going on regardless of what it looks like on the outside? Can we keep following him? Can we trust his truth? Can we keep our feelings out of the equation? Can we quit letting people drag us down? Let's just relentlessly follow him and trust that he knows what is best and he will do what is best. That's the person that gets the fruit. I don't know what God spoke to you about tonight, but if God spoke to you, piano's playing, the altar's open, why don't you come? Why don't you come?